You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden. Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
What's going on, K-State Nation? Another edition of the Pro Project Podcast Weekly. Coming at you right now. This is the second weekly of the week. Through a surprise weekly, episode 147. I just got done recording that and it's up now. Wherever you get your podcast, this podcast, all things K-State Athletics, right here in Manhattan, Kansas. Your host, Eddie Greer here with you once again. Busy night for the podcast here. Getting some recordings done here. I just got done literally about 45 minutes ago recording K-State Oklahoma recap. So if you're looking for a postcast, you're not going to get it. It's going to be a weekly because the teams K-State played yesterday were both against Oklahoma. So I pretty much put that together in a package and it's out now as we're recording the second weekly of the week here on this Thursday night, March 2nd. Cannot believe it's already March already. Here in 2023, and we are getting closer to postseason basketball and all that here coming up on this weekly edition of the Purple Project Podcast. If your first time listening to this K-State podcast, welcome on board to the show. If you like what you're hearing this week, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast there as well. And we'll do some house cleaning throughout the podcast as well. But now it's time to bring on my co-host, usually for the Pro Project Podcast Weekly, episode 148 on this one here, folks. None other than Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California. And oh, for those of you who knew, me and Alex are both K-State alums. Alex, what's happening out there?
Not much, Eddie. I was telling you before the podcast that I was doing better. And then right when I say that, my throat, here I am clearing my throat, so it sounds like I'm not. But I'm doing better. I played injured a little bit last week, played through an injury, you know, but tough to duff, got through the pod after a couple weeks of COVID, and finally this past weekend, tested negative, started to feel better, and back to normal tonight, so I'm excited to talk college basketball with you. Lots of tons of stuff going on. K-State's in a 4-game winning streak, 1 game left, Big 12 tournaments next week, NCAA tournament, selections those week from Sunday, so there's tons to break down there. The men's softball team. Let's get the sports right. I'm really not. I'm acting like I'm not better, but I am. I promise. The baseball team has not won since we spoke last. So they're on a slide. The women's team sure took Oklahoma to the brink, but couldn't quite get them in overtime. So you know that's there's that and. So there's lots of stuff going on. So we're eager to break it down with you, Eddie. But I do have to say, the Wildcat 919, Eddie, tweeted out today. They asked everybody, were you on the Wildcat 919? Or if you were, tell us when you were and what shows you were on. And so, Eddie, I got in there. And I plugged us both. I said that today. You know, I was there for DJAA for 3 years. And then was the hosted produced Waka World of Sports for 2 years, and then mentioned you and I in sports talk. You know, we would cut our teeth a little bit on sports talk there a little bit. I should have mentioned us doing play by play in college. I did mention that.
Maybe I'll do that one because that's the first time I missed that one.
I tagged you in it, Eddie. So
I gotta go back and check it then. All right.
So you go check your tags. I tagged you. I tagged Bill Gurney in it as well because Bill had to get tagged as well because he was.
He was in it. Yep.
So he was in there too. So tagged him. But yeah, they were retweeting everyone. So it was cool. Moral of the story, Eddie. It was cool to see everybody in the replies talking about their experience at Wildcat 919. You had people comment on there, yeah, I was there from 02 to 06, like a long time ago. And, you know, I was doing this on this show. And then I was on from 08 to 2012, and then you had it as close to, you know, I was on up to last year. So it was cool to see. You know, us as Wildcat 919 alums, it was cool to see just kind of the replies in there. But yeah, you know, we do this because, you know, we enjoy to be able to talk to the people, and I think we enjoy it because, you know, that was a good times, man. Those are good times, the Wildcat 919, you know, being able to get in front of the mic and just go and so, you know, call games and heck, you know, their sports department's really good right now. I've heard them, on some calls this year, but yeah, good times. So it was a nice little trip down, memory lane.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to get on it, tomorrow. I'm going to check that out because I definitely missed out. Well, sort of missed out on that. Wasn't on Twitter that much today. So, yeah, I'm going to definitely go check that out. Thanks. I appreciate that. I'm going to have to go add that in there.
You're going to get nostalgic real quick when you start seeing the replies and everyone's saying. And then all of a sudden you're going to be like, oh, man, I got to list like everything I did on there. And then you're going to list it down. And then it got to the point where it's like, oh, man, let me go look at my KABs. Like, I want to go look at my KAB awards now. I want to just go see them because I haven't pulled them out in forever. And I remember, you know, getting them for a couple different things. I know he got one for a Bruce Weber interview, ironically enough, that we had. And then DJ Double A. Remember DJ Double A, Eddie?
He got
one. And also, I should have mentioned this, but I didn't. You had your EG3 your race show, right? On the Rocket 9192.
You had
me on one time, and I don't watch racing. You know, you're big in that, and you've got your podcast on it, right?
You still have it. Yep.
You do. You still have it, and you still go strong with it. And I see on Twitter that that you still are very opinionated, and stay glued to that. But you had me on, and I had no idea what the hell I was talking about. And I think I spent like a whole segment talking about like pumpkin spice lattes and how everything should be pumpkin spice. Which, looking back at that now, that makes me kind of cringe because I don't quite feel the same way. But I remember that segment too. So. Good stuff. That came in my mind, that segment that we had. So that is good times, man. Good times.
Yep. I had a lot of the 91 staff on my when I first got that started.
You had a ton of the people.
Yeah, there are some hilarious conversations. Oh, man, I can go on and on. That's going to have to be another podcast for another time.
It's a trip down memory lane.
Oh, yeah.
I still have some of the audio saved. I will say this. I don't know how much audio you have saved, but I do have on my old laptop some audio saved from some stuff that I did. So I'm gonna crank it out. Give it a listen or two.
Yep. Me too. I got it somewhere. I got to dig it out. I know I cleaned out some in the house, or majority of the house, I should say, a couple weeks ago. So I'm definitely going to have to dig it out. But I know I have some in the old laptop. So, and of course, I have all the episodes on the NASCAR feed as well. So, well, the current ones anyways, but yeah, definitely trip down memory lane. So, definitely shout out to the Wildcat 919 here on the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, Wildcat 919, doing great work in Manhattan. And, you know, honestly, think of all the podcasts that are out there now, K-State Podcast, Eddie. Think how many Wildcat 919 people have K-State Podcast now. I would say... You know, obviously Fitz was plugged in with the J School, right? John Kurtz plugged in at the J School and plugged in with Wildcat 919. Steve Smethers, I know he doesn't have a podcast, but, you know, he was plugged in with Wildcat 919. And then you think of pretty much any K-State alumni that's in Flando, Wildcat 919 alum. So Wildcat 919 has really turned out and prepped a lot of the K-State reporters, podcasters, bloggers, whoever, you know, media, I don't want to say media, but content, K-State content creators. The Wildcat 919 really prepped a lot of them. So, you know, again, kudos, shout out to 919. And you know, it's great to see.
Yep, and you didn't by chance plug in the Pro Project Podcast, did you? If you didn't, I'm going to step in and do it.
Do it, dude. Jump in there and use it as a trampoline to announce this podcast and give it the promotion so everybody in that big long chat can see the Purple Project Podcast. But I did spread it. I told you, Eddie. I told you last week. I spread it. I spread the word to the San Diego K-State Alumni Association members. So they got the plug. They got the plug. So, you know, we'll keep spreading it.
Yeah, we'll keep doing what we've been doing. Good stuff, good stuff. I'm pretty sure we'll hash it out, continue to hash it out. Maybe when we reach 150th episode here, which is really coming quickly here since I did another weekly here earlier tonight, which I posted. It's already posted now, so folks can listen to that. Episode 147, focusing on basketball with K-State splitting against Oklahoma. Okay, we'll have a little bit more to talk about that later, but... Yep, so definitely we're coming up on a mini milestone once again on the podcast. So definitely exciting times for this podcast. Speaking of exciting times, not so exciting times, well, except for coming home to Toyton Family Stadium, every K-State baseball team. They have lost five straight, and of course, Alex, your prediction was correct. They lost three straight after losing to Lamar, 4-3. On the road, and you stay on the road at Round Rock, Texas, and you get beat by, look, they hung tough against LSU, number one team in the nation, and but eventually lost late. Sam Houston, we talked about it on the last week's edition of the podcast. That was the most winnable game of the three. They ended up losing that one, 8-3. And then Iowa, you hung in with them, and you lose by one. And, of course, going back to Tuesday night, 7-6 loss. K-State was up by three runs late and give it away. That is their second consecutive one-run loss in this losing streak. And we go back to Lamar. They lost 4-3. So in this five-game losing streak, Alex, they have lost three of these games, half of these games by a run. And now the positive thing, now you're going home and you're taking on these teams that we're talking about. Before that, real quick, just give me your synopsis of this K-State baseball team right now. They have given away at least two games here, which they could have been. This could have been easily 5-4, but instead it's the other way around, 4-5.
Yeah, you know exactly. And then before the season began, Eddie, I said, you know, 4-4. Yeah, you know, I'll take down the first eight, and then you know, see what you can do from there. They started 4-0. And, you know, you're thinking, oh, okay, you know, well, I wasn't expecting that, or I wasn't anyway. I wasn't expecting it. I thought that they may, I think I said if they can split that, and then if they can get, you know, maybe they can get Lamar or Houston, get one of those, and then get one in the Round Rock Classic or something like that, you know, that put a 5-4, you know, or heck, even... you know, some sort of different math, but I thought that they would end up around 4-5, 5-4, something like that, going home. I just didn't expect the path that was taken. I didn't expect them to start 4-0, go sweep Stephen F. Austin on the road, and then I didn't expect them to drop the next five. I did think that there was a possibility once they lost to Lamar, they were 4-1, which is when we talked last week on the pod. I did think there was a possibility that they would go to the Round Rock Classic and get swept. I thought that if you can get one, you'll be thrilled. Sam Houston State, yeah, that's your best shot, is what I thought, which, ironically enough, that's the one they lost by the most. But that was what I thought. And ultimately, they played tough. Again, you mentioned it. You know, they played tough. LSU, they played tough. Iowa. But they just couldn't get those. And you mentioned Omaha. That's the one that really hurt. It stung to lose all three at the Round Rock Classic, but to go on the road to Omaha against a team that a decent team, but a game that you were winning. You mentioned there by three runs. I thought it might have been up by 4 or 5 at one point, but they were up by three late, and then they let Omaha score four. Was like a four late? It like an eighth or something. That night, I can't remember what inning it was, but they. Omaha scored four late, wins by one, and K-State blows it and drops to 4-5. So that one stung. I think that was one that hurt the most. It's tough. You know, that's tough to take. But all in all, Eddie, I'm not sounding any alarm bells right now. You know, if K-State's not losing any games, you know, 60-2. If we saw last year, the year before, you know, they would go up against ranked teams, and it might be like 60-2, and you know, 18-5, or just like really bad scores. And you know, against LSU again, that's the number one team in the country. They lost 7-3. You know, they hung with them. Yeah, you know, they lost Sam Houston State by 5, but you know, you only lose by 1 to Iowa, you only lose by 1 to Lamar, you only lose by 1 to Omaha. You know, I've talked about this before on the podcast, but law of averages, those things are going to even out. You know, you're going to lose some one-run games, and then, you know, you're going to win some. Now, obviously, good teams are better at closing out close games. That's a true thing. That's a true statement. That's a real thing. But in baseball, and you know this, Eddie, as well as anyone, baseball is such a... It's such a analytical game, such a percentage-based game, and you play so many games because you just can't take a ton for one game. And again, law of averages are going to balance out. That's why you play 162 baseball games in MLB. You know, a team's going to go on a 9-game losing streak. It's just going to happen. And a team's going to go on a 9-game winning streak. You know, that's just the way baseball is, and those things are going to balance out. You're going to get hot, things are going to go your way, and then it's going to flip, and they're not. So, K-State's not getting blown out, so there's really nothing that's going on that's like, you know, red flags going up for me, Eddie. I think for K-State, and then we'll get into this here moving forward, but I think the biggest thing is they need to go home and win. That's where they're at, in my opinion. Yeah, you know, you went 4-5. It would have been nice to be 5-4. It would have been nice to take advantage of your 4-0 start. You didn't. Okay, it is what it is. It's not gonna look. It's not gonna make or break your season. Okay, we're too early in the season to be talking about making or breaking a season. So it's not gonna make or break your season. Just go home, beat Army, beat Stonehill, beat Youngstown State, and. You know, if you can have a winning homestand in those 7 games before you go on the road against Creighton, you're putting yourself in a fine position. So I think that is really the most important thing for them is to flush the lot past games, go home to Toyton. We talked about it. They play a lot better at home and win. Now, if they go to Toyton and they're losing games to Army, you know, they're losing games to Stonehill, they're losing games to Youngstown State, then... You know, we're having a different discussion, but Omaha's a decent team. You know, we talked about it. You know, they're not bad.
Yeah, they're a tough team. They're a pesky little team.
Yeah, they're a tough team. It's on the road. You know, they've played 9 straight on the road. So, that's tough. That's tough, man, to open your first 9 on the road. I mean, that's not easy. Or road or neutral site. So, we'll see what they do and then they get back home.
Yeah, and the records of these teams, homestand, K-State Nation, homestand beginning tomorrow, folks. At Twin Family Stadium, beginning with, again, I don't like how this is scheduled out, but we're going to have to roll with it anyways. Army tomorrow afternoon at Twin Family Stadium to kick off the home schedule for the baseball team. And then Saturday around lunchtime, they play Stonehill. And again, this is somewhat of a mini tournament. So all these teams are going to be playing against one another. So Army, Stonehill, and then Sunday afternoon again, late. First pitch at 4 o'clock at Twin Family Stadium against Army, which is going to be the Sunday Family 4-Pack, folks. So, you listen to this podcast, you're going to be around Manhattan this weekend. Definitely take your family out to the ball game. Definitely good time to go out there right now and enjoy some K-State baseball. And then, of course, all wraps up on Monday with Stonehill, 4 o'clock, first pitch, just a little bit after that. So, all these games are in the afternoon. Stonehill Game 2 is the earliest, 12 o'clock Central Time, 1 o'clock Eastern Time as well. And Army, did a little research on them before hopping on the podcast after a little break in between recording weeklies. Army, so 4-2, Army. And then, of course, Stonehill, winless. They got crushed against Tarleton State, 12-4, 14-4. 16-4 and 22-6. Woo!
Yeah, K-State needs to crush Stonehill. Yeah. I'm sorry. Look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. They got to crush those 2 games. I mean,
yeah,
you got to crush them. You got to crush those 2 games. You mentioned Army's 4-2. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion thinking that you're going to win both those games. You know, but you've got to crush Stonehill. Yeah, come on. I mean, look, that's You mentioned it. You just mentioned it. You got to crush them and get at least one against Army.
Yeah, and take a look at Army's schedule here. They started off with Air Force to begin the season a couple weeks ago. They took 2 of 3 from Air Force. We got to play Air Force in the schedule, Alex, as well. We went over that.
Yep.
And they took 2 of 3 from Charlotte on the road. So, and now they end here. So, got K-State, same teams as well. So, really intriguing there. So, they get K-State, you know, they can't overlook Army, obviously, but they're at home. Yeah, I expect them to stack up some wins in this on this a homestand. I expect that. I'm not going to sugarcoat that either. So they're the better team on paper. But again, baseball is a tricky sport, folks. Alex, you know that, and yeah, plenty of our listeners know that as well. Got to play on the field. Got to play it on the field. So we'll see.
Probably the most unpredictable sport.
Uh huh. Yep. Mm-hmm. Unpredictable sport. So Army kicks off a unique home schedule for K-State baseball. Of course, 4-5 for K-State. That all begins tomorrow at 4, first pitch there. So looking forward to see what K-State can respond here in this long losing streak of 5 straight. You'll listen to the Purple Project Podcast, All Things K-State, episode 148, 2 weeklies. Yes, surprise, 2 weeklies this week. Eddie Greer, Alexander for the Pro Project Podcast Weekly, switching gears over to women's basketball. And we're going to talk a little bigger picture. As I said, I recorded episode 147 already earlier tonight. It's already up there in the Pro Project Podcast feed, so definitely check that out this weekend there as well. But K-State, you mentioned Alex there, and I'm not going to say any more what I said on the recording there. But, yeah, K-State was on the verge of a huge upset. But then Oklahoma hit a late shot there to force overtime. And then after that, that was all she wrote there as well. And K-State, Alex, on the road, has that goose egg. 0-9 there to wrap up the road schedule. You got to come home. And I'm leaving it a chance here. Maybe they got something for... They play better at home, obviously. I've been saying all year long about this K-State women's basketball team. They welcome in Texas, and look, Texas, they have the inside track to the number one seed because they beat Oklahoma, swept Oklahoma in the season series already. So Texas got something to play for. K-State, Serena Sundell is playing lights out all of a sudden, red hot on the court right now. And last night, 33 points last night in a heartbreaking effort. What a performance there by Serena. They're in that game. But now you come home, senior day for the K-State women's team on Saturday. And they got a chance to play spoiler. And we've seen this K-State team come up big in the past 2 seasons at home with ranked opponents coming into Bramlage. And this is an opportunity to get revenge on Texas again. That lopsided loss on the road in Austin to start it. Now you have a chance to play spoiler against Texas. Looking forward to this K-State women's basketball team, 16-14 now in the year, and 5-12 in conference play. And obviously, you're going to still get that one more game in Kansas City for the K-State women's team for the Big 12 women's tournament. They're in Municipal Arena in Kansas City coming up as well. So you at least have one more game after this. And I don't even know if the WNIT is possible for this team after some tough losses here lately. I gave it a chance. I'm the optimist on this show. I gave it a chance, and they let me down. So I don't even know that's the opportunity there for them. But here, you still have a chance here to make some kind of a statement here and maybe go into the postseason with a little bit of momentum. I don't know. But what do you think about the as we come up to the end of the year for the women's basketball team? What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question about the women's NIT. I would assume that they probably have been running for that, but you never know. You mentioned it. They win. They're 17-14. They play a pretty good non-con. So, you know, 17-14, 6-12 in conference play. Say you go to Kansas City, you win a couple games. You know, maybe they can play themselves into that. I don't know what tournaments are available beyond the women's NIT. I know that there are some postseason tournaments. Don't know if they'd even accepted an invite. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But what we saw, Eddie, was pretty much right on few is what we talked about last week when we were on the pod. You know, they beat KU, and we were talking about, well, you know, did they, you know, have they kind of turn, you know, taken a step because they, you know, they were able to beat Baylor at home, but they lost to TCU in between KU and Baylor on the road. And TCU stinks. I mean, no offense to TCU, but they really are a very bad basketball team, the women. So, you know, it's just kind of been a topsy-turvy season. And you mentioned that they didn't want to give them the road. So, going on the road to West Virginia and Oklahoma seemed like a tall task, which is what I echoed on the pod last week. But I said, hey, you know, West Virginia, that's winnable. You know, West Virginia was, I can't remember what the record was, but it was 16-12 or something like that.
Yeah, it was like 16-12 or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so you weren't going up against, you know, a top 15 team, a top 15 or a top 20 team. So you had a chance to go there and get a win. I mean, that was a winnable game. You know, they go and they lose by 9. You know, they just can't quite get it going. Kind of similar to the Tech game a little bit that they played on the road earlier in the year. And, you know, just could not get going there. And so you're like, great. Well, you know, they're going to go to OU and they're going to get their doors blown off. And they competed with OU, man, on the road. Something that I was not expecting.
No way. I was not expecting that.
You know, not at all. I mean, and OU took care of K-State. In Manhattan. And
yeah,
so,
I was there. I was there for that, yeah.
Yeah, you were there. You were there. Super Bowl Sunday, you were there. And it was not very pretty, but they played a lot better in Norman for whatever reason. what the backbreaker was, Eddie, was that you let Oklahoma, you know, get a game-tying layup with, a second half left.
Yeah.
Send that to overtime. Yeah, that hurt. That hurt. And then, you know, once that game goes to overtime, you're thinking, under that circumstances, I mean, no, the Oklahoma's not gonna let that slip, and they didn't. They ended up winning that game by 4, but you know, that one hurt. But you know, you end it on a losing streak and on the road, you don't win a game, and so you know, coming up against Texas, I think they got a shot. I'm with you. They're playing better. I stand by kind of what I said last week that they are playing better, but they just haven't been consistent. But they're having their flashes. You know, they beat Baylor at home. They beat KU at home. They took Oklahoma in overtime on the road. And then they also did beat Iowa State at home. So, you know, they can compete with Texas at home the way they're playing. Now, it sounds kind of silly saying now when they lost by 46 to Texas earlier in the season. But I still think that they can. So, will they do it? I doubt it. Can they do it? Yes, I think so. Would I be surprised if they did it? No, I really wouldn't, honestly. The way this season's gone, especially in the back half, it really wouldn't surprise me. So we'll see what happens. But you mentioned it, Eddie. I mean, you're right. At this point, they're playing with house money, trying to get through this season at this point, I think. And I'm really looking ahead to next year again when you get Oakley back. And compare her with some of the players they got coming back. You could be looking at a top 25 team. So I really think that, as silly as it sounds, you just kind of like, man, I'm ready for next year at this point because you know you're going to have a decent team and you can put some talent around it. But you know, you got to finish this thing out. And you know, again, you had a chance to you know, get some girls some valuable minutes here the remaining part of the season. And I think ultimately, I just want them to finish strong. You know, finish strong, play Texas top, go to Kansas City, play Kansas City top, and just, you know, see it through, finish strong, and then understand that you're going to have a good team next year. And there's a lot to look forward to. So that's kind of the mindset going into Texas for me.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 148. Of the Pro Project Podcast Weekly, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, both of us K-State alums at K-State University and Wildcat 919 alums as well. Yeah, I want them to finish strong as well. So Texas, I give them a shot to spoil the party there, hopefully on Senior Day for the women's team. And then, of course, they're pretty much locked in that 9 seed for the Big 12 tournament. against Texas Tech, so they'll have a chance for some revenge when it matters there as well. Singer's going to be honored on Saturday for the women's team, for Jeff Mitty's team. Sarah Samasti will be honored as well, as I'm going right down the roster here. Gabby Gregory will be honored as well. What a season she's had on the topsy-turvy, unfortunately, season for the team. But Gabby's been really wonderful addition with this team. And it kind of hurts to see what if Ioka Lee was healthy, what would have done with his team. But Gabby Gregory's done more of a share.
Ioka Lee's never had a player like that to play aside of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, next to.
That was the purpose.
And that was the thought. That was the thought, right, when you bring Gabby in, was that, you're going to be able to pair Gabby with Ioka, and you're going to get this scoring duo that's going to be nearly unguardable, and you just never got to see it. So I do feel bad for her, and I definitely would like to finish strong for her in particular,
Yes, for her, definitely. Yeah, she's well-deserved of that. This team's pretty relatively young. Emily Ebert, who's been here forever, it seems like, will be honored on Saturday afternoon. She's been great in her K-State career. I know she's had a couple of struggles lately, though, but she's been good most of the time. And, of course, Ioka Lee will be back next year. She already announced that last summer before she got her knee surgery repaired. So you only have right there, I listed off three seniors. This team is still, Alex, relatively young. Now, again, with the transfer portal thrown in there, not even mentioned in there, again, if everyone, again, knock on wood, if everyone comes back, you have a year on your belt, and for the trio of sophomores, and of course, unfortunately, Bradley Glenn left the game early last night, but you have the girls coming back, so you have some pieces coming back there for your team, and I'm not trying to fast forward and look too forward to the offseason yet, but you gotta think next recruiting class with Jeff Mitty, and you can't really knock him for the injury to Ioka Lee, whatnot, but looking ahead in that crystal ball yours, Alex, what do you think about next season with this team? And of course, opinion with a healthy Ioka Lee next year.
Well, I saw one person say they're a preseason top 10 team, and I think that is going too far. I did see that on Twitter, and I was like, ooh, I don't know if I go there. But I think the ceiling's high for them. I also think that in college athletics, in today's day and age with the transfer portal, it's very hard to predict year to year what is going to happen. You don't know how many players are going to transfer out, or how many players are going to stay. You don't know who's going to be available in the portal. There's just so many unknowns to what can happen. And so, the roster could look. There could be so many different versions of this team next year. And so it's just really hard to see, know what that's going to look like, but. Assuming that the core stays right, that they've got with Sundell and with the Glenn twins and with some of the other young pieces that they have, and you're able to go transfer hunting again, so to speak, try to find a playmaker like Gabby Gregory that you can pair with Ioka Lee. If you can get that and continue to grow that young talent that you surrounded Ioka Lee with last year, then I think you're putting yourself in a position where you're looking at a top 25 team, potentially, and an NCAA tournament team. So, I think that you've got to be optimistic about next year. And look, you've got to go all in. There's no way around it. We've talked about this before, Eddie. Ioka Lee is a generational type talent. You're not going to get a Ioka Lee coming to K-State in women's basketball on the regular. That is not something that you can plan on. So you got to take advantage of the opportunity of having Ioka Lee, and you got to make something of it. And so the most they have to show for it is a second round exit in the NCAA tournament. Good season. It was a good season. No doubt about it, but you want to have you want to go all in. You want to go all in, and you want to make the best push that you can for her, for the university, for the program, and really use it as an opportunity. We talked about the same thing with Deuce. You know, we said the same thing. That's a generational type player. It's a little bit different running back. It's easier to find, you know, good running backs, but you can't find a Deuce. You know, Deuce is irreplaceable. And so you get a talent like that in your building, you've got to take advantage of that. And you've got to be able to win with that. And K-State won a Big 12 title last year. So they were able to do that with him. You know, when you got, you get Colin Klein and Tyler Lockett paired together, you got to take advantage of it. In case it did, they won a Big 12 title. And so that's what you've got to be able to do when you get that generational type of talent. You know, when you get a Jacob Pullen, a Michael Beasley in the building, you got to go win. And K-State went to an Elite Eight with Jacob Pullen. Could they have done more? Sure. Could they have done more with Michael Beasley? Sure. But they made a push, you know. Michael Beasley was not part of the Elite Eight team that made a push, but he set up, you know, he set the culture for the Elite Eight team that came in 2010. And so, and really set the culture for the basketball program. So you've got to take advantage of those generational type players, and that's what the K-State women's team has to do. They have to lead. You know, they've got to be able to do that. They've got to go all in, and they've got to position themselves best they can to really get the K-State program exposure, make them more attractive to recruits in the future, to set a foundation, lay a foundation, and then to win with her. So that's what you've got to do. I'm optimistic that they can do it, but it's going to be a lot of pressure on Jeff Pitty because, you know, if they go out and they don't do that next year, what does his future look like? That's a question. You know, if all he can say is, yeah, the best they did with Aoka Lee was finish, you know, in the middle of the Big 12 conference and a second round exit in the NCAA tournament, that's not the best selling point when you've got the best player of the Big 12 on your team. So, and I will go on a limb and guess that she will probably be the best player of the Big 12 because she is a freak in a good way. A very, very good freak. Very good at basketball. We obviously need to see how her knee is, right? You know, that's a question. But
yeah.
I expect her to come back and bounce back from that. And so we have to see. But I'm optimistic, Eddie. Not top 10 optimistic, like the one fan I saw on Twitter. But I am top 25 optimistic that they can be a ranked team, that they can be a team that finishes in the top half of the Big 12, understanding that these rosters can turn over so quick. In the off season, that it can change at a moment's notice.
Yeah, and we all forget that this team was ranked 24th at one point earlier this year as well. So I'm right there with you. I wouldn't say
I beat Iowa. I don't know. I did that. I can't. That's the one I really can't figure out. I've watched Iowa play so much and Caitlin Clark play so much, and how on earth did K-State beat that? I can't figure it out.
Don't know.
Can't figure it out, Eddie.
Don't know. It's one of those things. Crazy, crazy, man. So I think you go all in. Try to find another Gabby Gregory, if you want to say, or maybe even find two good sharpshooters to put around her as well, along with that rising trio that's going to be juniors next year as well. In a way, Serena Sundell is playing to end the season. She has a lot of momentum right now. And Jalen Glenn, I've said this all year long on the postcast. Jalen Glenn has really taken a step forward in scoring the basketball. Bradley, you get every now and then get her to score as well. She's been dealing with injuries, unfortunately. But get a healthy Bradley Glenn, she can do some damage as well. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a big year next year for coming. Whatever the roster looks like when it comes to the fall of 2023 for K-State Women's Basketball. This is the Purple Project Podcast, weekly episode 148, K-State Nation. This podcast, looking around K-State Athletics for this weekend real quick before we dive into some men's basketball. Tennis, speaking of turning around the season, tennis need to get going on their season. Women's tennis I'm talking about. They host Wichita State here in Manhattan tomorrow at 2 p.m. They badly need a win against rival. That'll be nice to see them beat Wichita State. We'll see what happens there. And of course, we already went over baseball against Army. That's tomorrow afternoon. Start of a 5-game homestand, 4 in a row. And it starts tomorrow against Army. And then rowing. Women's rowing gets started here a little bit with their little trio. They have OU, Tulsa, not Colorado. I got to double check on that. But they're going to be playing going up against 3 other teams. So women's rowing, K-State Nation, getting things going this weekend. That's going to be on Saturday. And, of course, you have basketball across the board. K-State going on the road to Morgantown to wrap up their regular season while the ladies on senior day wrap it up with Texas, 12th-ranked Texas. They're here at Bramlage on Saturday. I believe tennis has one more game this weekend as well. So a lot of other things going on besides basketball. You got tennis trying to turn things around a little bit, trying to get something positive here going there. As well, if you've been paying attention to any of the recaps there as well, it hasn't been pretty. But they're trying to make some strides here. Hopefully it begins tomorrow as we in the middle of this recording of episode 148 of this podcast. So women's tennis, they got to get going there as well. Speaking of getting going here, K-State men's basketball, switching gears to the men's basketball team, taking care of Oklahoma last night on senior night there. Big games all around by Desi, Big Game Dez, KJ Noel, and Naquan Tomlin really starting to come along as well. And the seniors were honored last night, including Nate Aubrey, Ejiola, Bebe Ejiola, and Tyke Green. And then you have the 3 obvious ones with Desi, KJ, and Marquise Noel there. Alex, just thinking big picture now, because I already talked about the OU game already on episode 147, so I don't want to spoil all of that for the listeners out there. But looking ahead to West Virginia, obviously, Destiny is setting up for K-State. Now, you win, I believe it's a 2-seed for the Big 12. For the 2-seed. Yeah, that's what I thought. So you win this game, you're a lot for a 2-seed. If not, I think things get complicated, for it's the second seed. I believe they could be the 3rd seed if they lose. I'm not sure.
So the scenario, Eddie. I'll just give you a quick scenario for this because I heard it on a podcast earlier today.
Go for it.
If K-State wins, they're the 2. If they lose, but Iowa State and Baylor lose. Sorry, not Iowa State and Baylor lose. If Iowa State and Texas lose. Scratch that. If Baylor and Texas lose, there we go. They are, K-State's still the 2. If K-State loses and one of those teams wins and one loses, K-State is the 3. If K-State loses and both of those teams win, Baylor and Texas, K-State is the 4. And just so everybody knows, Baylor plays Iowa State at home on Saturday. And then KU plays Texas. Texas plays KU in Austin on Saturday. So those are their matchups. So I don't know what the most likely scenario is, but those are the possible scenarios.
Oh, yeah, those are all the scenarios, right? So it definitely does come down to, and KU has a 2-game lead on K-State, so... Yeah, so KU is going to be likely the 1 again in Kansas City. And all that's going to be played out on Saturday on the court for sure. So it's going to be a tough atmosphere for K-State to go up to Morgantown. We all know that by now. But if this team, like we've seen all year, is up to the task, they can beat this West Virginia team. So we'll see what happens there. But the impact, Alex, of these seniors, and especially, obviously, with Noel sticking around, he could have transferred out, but decided to stay put and be a part of this rebuilding mode, this elevate elevate process of Jerome Tang. And then you have Ish, who stayed as well. But you have all these other random pieces that come together, and they have played very well. Tyke Green. Keontae Johnson, one of the last pieces to join K-State, right? Desi Steeles, who was late onto the team, and made an impact right off the bat in practice that we've heard So the impact of these seniors, Bebe, another one. So all these that I just mentioned have made some type of impact. Ish is a junior, so assuming he'll be back, but you never know. Again, leaving that out there, but again, with the transfer portal out there, but I would assume, again, he'll come back. There's been a lot of chatter about, I heard from a couple of podcasts, including 3Ma. Fran was on 3Ma, if you're listening to that already. He mentioned Naquan Tomlin. I definitely agree he should come back for a senior season. He could be a huge piece next year. You know, talking about Aoka Lee on the women's side, Naquan Tomlin, he come back next year. He's going to be a big, vital piece. And you already got that good recruiting class as well coming in here, Alex, next year as well. But the legacy, obviously, we still have one game left in the West Virginia game. And then you have how far does K-State go in the Big 12 tournament? And then, of course, where do we land in the NCAA tournament? So still quite a bit to go for this team. Sky's the limit for this team. But the legacy of this senior class, Alex, what do you think about this? This class, as we close in on the end of the regular season for Jerome Tang. Jerome Tang, by the way, and I went on a rant on episode 147, so I'm not going to spoil that, so you got to check that out. you probably guess what that is, but Jerome Tang has done a tremendous job putting these pieces together and to gel them together. Now, obviously, they've had their struggles before they're on a four-game winning streak. But that they've really come together here, and if they can play, you got to play your best basketball at the right time. Like baseball, like football, you see it all the time, especially lately in the last several years. You got to play well at the right time.
You do. You absolutely do. And so quickly to hit on the seniors and kind of the impact that they've had their legacy, and then I'll kind of pivot back from there, but starting with the legacy, I think that part of it depends probably how far they go, Eddie. I mean, I'll just be honest, if they go to Kansas City and win it, win the Big 12 tournament, I don't think they've ever done that, not that I can recall, in my lifetime anyway. So they go do something like that. If they go and they make it to the second weekend, they make it to the Sweet 16. And they're playing in the second weekend, playing in the Sweet 16, maybe getting a win there, maybe playing the Elite Eight. If they make a run like that, I think that changes a little bit kind of the way that they're viewed in their legacy. That's just a reality. That's just a reality of the NCAA tournament. It's so much of it is based on what you do late in the season. With all that said. The legacy has already been carved for these players, and I'd say really for this team in general, but especially for these players, and in particular Keontae and Marquise, and I think for different reasons, to be honest, Eddie. I think that the legacy of Marquise is being the undersized guard, brought in to be the backup to sit Nigel Pack on Bruce Weber's squad, and a player who went through the valleys and has gone through the peaks and the valleys of a season and a career. He stayed at K-State when things got tough, and he texted Gene and suggested Jerome Tang for the job. Jerome Tang gets the job. That was not the main reason why he got the job, but he gets the job. He ends up getting the job, and Marquise stays, and you're right, he stays with Ish, and to set that foundation, and then for Marquise to follow it up and do what he's done this year. They showed a graphic on the game last night where it was most double-doubles in a season by a K-State player of the last, 25 years or something, and Marquise had 10, and the next highest was Denny Clemente and Angel Rodriguez tied for 2. So Marquise has been spectacular. I think way better than any of us ever imagined that he would be this year. And I think he'll be remembered for just being that dog, being that warrior that was going to get down in the mud, man. I mean, Jerome Tang said in his first meeting with the team, all players who can get down in the mud with me. He was willing to get down in the mud with him and go to work. And and to do what he's done and be probably an all Big 12 first team player. That's just incredible. That's incredible. And so the legacy of Marquise Noel is going to be that, and being here to set that foundation. And then Keontae is going to be completely different, you know, legacy. You know, it's going to be a legacy of a comeback story, you know, the legacy of somebody who, you know, saw their life flash right before their eyes. And, you know, we saw him, you know, motionless on the court in 2020, you know, with the heart, and to come back and to come to K-State, and then not just to come to K-State, Eddie, but to, again, rebuild this culture and to be as good as he is, averaging damn near 18 points a game this season, putting himself in position to potentially be a first-round draft pick in the NBA draft, and really leading K-State on the court and being that kind of dog for him out there. It's just been enormous. And so I think his story is great. I hope K-State can make a deep run, Eddie, in March, so his story can get told nationally and more people can see it. That really is my hope for him. Because, you know, March Madness, you know, that's the perfect time for stories like that, for people to learn. Because, you know, the real fans know, but it would be great for the casual fans to know that story, too. But I think he's going to be known for that and for what he did there. And then you look at the role, you know, what's interesting, you mentioned Desi. It's interesting. You hear the way people talk about Desi, and there is so much love for Desi and what he does around K-State Nation. It's unbelievable. And it's crazy. It's crazy because, you know, it's maybe not something you'd expect. But Cole Hambeck said, you know, Desi's going to go down as one of our K-Staters of all time. And he's not the only person I've heard say that either. And it's he has really embraced this K-State, this university. And, you know, he tweeted he's Wildcat forever. And he just got here in October. I mean, you know, he hasn't been here that long, but he is Wildcat forever. He's just embraced the community, the university, and the university's embraced him right back. And so that has been something really special, and that's going to be his legacy. So obviously, as a whole, this senior class is going to be known as the group that came in and turned the tide, made K-State basketball fun again, you know, united the fan base. And really, because let's be honest, Eddie, it was a really divided fan base the last couple of years. You know, basketball wasn't fun to watch. Fans were bickering with each other. Some wanted to keep Bruce. Some wanted to get rid of Bruce. No one was excited about losing. No one was excited about watching what was on the court. And there's just a lot of tense division within the fan base. And so to bring this back, what we've had this year has been incredibly special, something that I don't think any of us expected to be on this level. And so they're going to be remembered for that. And that's going to go down to their legacy for laying the framework. Because I expect this to be the norm for them moving forward. Maybe not necessarily a team that's going to be, you know, 23-7 going into the final game of the year. I don't know if they'll be that good every year. There's probably going to be some years where they're better, some years where they're worse. But this is the standard. You know, Drum Tank made very clear that this is the standard, and he can get guys, and he's going to get guys. And, you know, once he can actually get his guys and not have a patchwork lineup put together, and I'm not saying this is patchwork, he got dudes, like, he got dudes in the portal. But once he can, like, get his guys in here, and he can and really get on that recruiting trail and find the ones he wants and you know, bring in again, you know, bring in RJ next year, and then bringing in Day-Day, and then, you know, the red-shirted players, being able to play them, being able to get Colbert involved, being able to get Taj Manning involved. And you talk to Manning, he says he's going to be all Big 12 first-team guy, you know, being able to get them in the mix, and then obviously go transfer hunting, because they're going to have transfer hunting to do, because they're going to have plenty of open spots. With how many players are leaving. So, you know, I think that's just going to be the standard in the door. But this team set that foundation. They set that foundation for it. And, you know, it was great. I just want to say it was great against Oklahoma that they got the send-off that they did that K-State was able to go out there and win that game, and not just win it, Eddie, but do it with style. I mean, they did it with some style, some pizzazz, some flash, and you know, they may have started slow, but they sure finished with fire the last 30 minutes or 25 minutes of that game. And to be able to do that, have students go, you know, have the players go into the section and do the Wabash, and then singing the alma mater with them, and being able to speak after the game to the fans, you know, it was just perfect. Being able, everyone being able to get their walk off there at the end, and get curtain call was really special. So it was just a perfect night. I'm glad that they were able to get that opportunity, and be really recognized for what is going to be a special legacy for them. But you know, again, it's not done. You know, the work is not done for them. A lot of what their legacy is going to be depends on what they do Saturday through March. And, you know, if they don't win another game this year, Eddie, that legacy's not going to be as – it's not going to shine quite as bright as it could, because there's still a lot on the line for them. You mentioned it. We still got Big 12 seeding on the line. We still got NCAA seeding on the line. And you know, there's still a lot to play for, so you know, that's still to be determined to a point. But it's been special to see what they've done.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
K-State basketball coming to the end of the regular season officially this weekend on Saturday for both the men's and women's basketball teams. Here, the men taking on West Virginia on the road, while K-State ladies are here in Manhattan to take on the ranked 12th-ranked Texas Longhorns. I might have that ranking wrong, but they're ranked anyway. So big games to end the regular season, and we'll see if the men's team can continue to build on that legacy here against West Virginia to put themselves in a good position in the Big 12 tournament. You can avoid KU in Iowa State. That would be great. To make it a little bit more manageable for this team to get.
I'll tell you this, Eddie. I'll just quickly chime in. I want to avoid the 4-5. I don't want to slide the 4. And they talked about this on the 3-1. I've only listened to part of the 3-1 today. I'm listening to the full one. But they talked about it a little bit. But I want nothing to do with being the 4 seed. Because if you're the 4 seed, you're likely playing a healthy TCU as a 5 seed, which we all know TCU is better than a 5 seed at full health. The only reason they're a 5 seed, it's because they had all the injuries. And then if you beat them, then you got to play KU. And that's, you know, no one wants to do that. And then if you somehow would win that, then you probably got to play Baylor or Texas. And that's just
brutal.
That's an awful break. That's an awful break. You would much rather end up as a 2 or 3 seed, play Oklahoma State or maybe Iowa State, and I'm with you. I don't love the thought of playing Iowa State, but
no,
they are scuffling.
No.
They're not as good as TCU. They're not as
They've fallen off.
They've fallen off. They're just not alone. Caleb Grill just got dismissed from the team, and I mean they're
ooh,
just kind
wait,
of
wait, hold up, time out. What? I just not hear
yeah,
it.
Caleb
what?
Grill got yeah, he got dismissed from the team this week, man. He's gone. He got dismissed. He's out. And they're scuffling, and nothing's going right at Ames right now. Nothing is going right.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, he did. He did not hold himself up, Eddie, to the team standards or something like that. And he came out, Caleb Grill came out and said that he was struggling with mental health stuff, and he said something that he shouldn't have said, and that he regretted it, and that he hoped he could, you know, be part of Cyclone Nation forever. He put out a long statement after. About that, but
oh boy.
So look, thoughts with Caleb Grill. Mental health is a real thing. I think we've talked about this on here before.
Yes, we
mental
have.
Health's
yep.
a real thing.
Yep.
And you know, I believe him when he says that he's probably struggling with that. And you know, prayers to him that you know he can get over that. With that said, you can't just say something. It had to be bad, Eddie. Whatever he said, I'm sure it wasn't good to get kicked you off the basketball. So, they don't have him, and they're unraveling. And, you know, Iowa State, man, they pack Spritzer, man. And that scares me. But I would still take my chances with that over playing, like, a TCU or playing, like, a Baylor. No. nah. on that. I'll take the chances with TCU at that point. But, you know, the 3-seed and the 2-seed, they're for the most part the same thing. I just want to end up on that side of the bracket be able to avoid TCU and KU. That's kind of what I want to avoid. Because, again, TCU is not a very good matchup for K-State. That's just not – they play fast. They push through. When they got Mike Miles in there, Eddie Lampkin in there, and that's just not great for K-State. And they're not really great for anyone. TCU is just – somebody said they're made for March. I can't remember who it was, but someone's like, that team is built for March. It may have been Fran Michel, actually. They're built for – he is 100% right. They are absolutely built for March. No one wants to see TCU at full health in March. And so, you know, yeah, you want to stay away from them. Like, KU is on fire right now, man. I understand that they've kind of sputtered their last couple home games, but they're on fire. So that was a very long-winded way of saying that I don't want to be a 4-seed, Eddie. No, I don't want to be a 4-seed. But I will say this. You know, if K-State's a one-and-done in Kansas City, look, is it the end of the world for me? No, not really. Would it be great to win in Kansas City? Yeah, but you know, my eyes are in the Big 12 tournament. Not Big 12 tournament, the NCAA tournament, and getting K-State there. And my thought process, Eddie, more than anything, is what does K-State need to do to secure a 2-seed? What do they need to do to get to that point? And I think one more win. That is my opinion. Maybe they need two. They could need two. Two would probably be the safe bet. But I think one more win gets them a 2-seed. And I know two. I'm pretty positive two more wins would do it. So I'm more of the mindset of, can you go to West Virginia and get a win? You know, or can you win that first round game in Kansas City? Like, that's kind of where my head's at. As far as I don't want to play TCU, because I feel like that's a tough matchup to get a win in Kansas City. I feel like it'd be much easier to do it against like an Oklahoma State or an Iowa State. But we'll just have to see.
Yeah, we'll have to see indeed. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think two to be safe to get that. So, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see what K-State can come out with here against West Virginia. And of course, we'll look forward to next week there. We'll get together here and figure something out here. But our special guest moved his time to next week, so me and him will coordinate that episode right before the Big 12, because I wanted to get in an episode before the Big 12 tournament started. So we'll see if we get one, maybe two before that. So we'll see how the schedule breaks next week for this podcast concerning when that selection of an NCAA tournament is revealed. We would like to definitely come back on here and talk about that right off the bat. So instead of waiting until Monday or whatever we record this podcast. But yeah, so we'll talk about that more moving forward, Alex, for this podcast. So definitely exciting times for K-State as we end the end of the regular season, 2022-23 season for K-State basketball. All right, red zone time, folks, for this podcast. We have made it to the red zone once again here on the Pro Project Podcast Weekly, all things K-State. And two things to touch on before we wrap the show. First one, I'm going to start off with MLB and the time clock.
I had a feeling.
And of course, my team was on the exception end of losing or keeping the game tied by not stepping in the batter's box. Of course it is.
Gotta get 2 feet in the batter's box in 8 seconds, Eddie. Come on.
Yep, so everything to be sped up a little bit quicker pace in baseball now. And I'm hearing from listening to the Braves podcast, that was two hours and 5 minutes. They want it at more of a brisker pace, a little bit quicker pace now. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on this? Is this good for Major League to kind of get a baseball game quick? Because I like it. Even though we're on the losing end, or I shouldn't say losing, the tying in of that game last week. But instead of sitting there at a baseball game 3 or 4 hours or 5 hours at a game waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you asked that, Eddie. And you know, I am for a pitch clock. and I feel like I'm kind of a normie, but maybe I'm not. I think the game's too slow. I thought the game was too slow. I really did. Think about it, Eddie. You are trying to get in casual fans, and you're trying to get young viewers, right, to grow your viewership. It is hard to do that when you have got a game that goes for 4 hours, and, you know, players are standing there adjusting their batting gloves, you know, getting some swings in. The pitchers are taking 10 seconds to pause to see if they get the runner at first to freeze, and you've got just all this different stuff going. It really can slow the game down. You know, pitchers getting guys get on base and they slow their pace down, and there's just a lot of standing. There's a lot of standing, and there's just a lot of waiting, and the game ends up taking, you mentioned it, three and a half hours, and you're just like, it's too slow of a pace, and that's not the way to keep baseball fans engaged and to keep the casual fan watching. You've got to find ways to get people engaged in baseball and then want to watch, and part of that is a quicker pace. I don't think there's any way. I understand the baseball purists, Eddie, hate it, and it drives them up the wall. But you've got to keep them engaged. You've got to do it. And I'm going to be honest, Eddie, love the pace. I love the pace. It is pretty nice to see them pitch, go back, get set, pitch, go back, get set, pitch. It's pretty nice. And I think it's good for baseball. I mean, they showed that, you know, they did the average times. It's trimming baseball, the average spring training games, down so far, like an average of like 30 to 40 minutes or something a game. So it's trimming some time off, and that's what you want. Now, here's my little gripe with it. I think, Eddie, the pitch clock's a little too short. It's 15 seconds, right? And you got to be set in the batter's box in 8. I think 20 seconds is a little more. Maybe it's just because we're still trying to get used to it, and players are still trying to get used to it, and maybe it won't seem so quick as the season goes. But right now, I don't know. In my mind, I just feel like that's a little too fast. If they could just have a few more seconds, if a batter can have a little more than 10 seconds to get set rather than 8, that's almost no time to get set in the box. You know, pitchers, once they get the ball, that clock starts ticking to 15. You get in a high-pressure moment, Eddie, in a playoff game. I mean, you really want a pitcher just flinging a ball out there in 8 seconds. I mean, that's a big moment in the game. So I feel like the clock could be a little longer. You know, maybe it's, instead of 15, it's 20. But the concept, 100% for the concept, 100% for that. It's weird. It's awkward. And it's a little. I've watched a little bit of baseball, and it's a little awkward to watch it. You know, it really is. But I think that it is something that we'll get used to as we're watching games every day. Because remember, we're watching baseball games every day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's something we'll get used to. We'll get used to it really quickly, and we'll enjoy it. And I'm gonna be honest, Eddie. When I sit down to watch a baseball game, you know, I want a quicker pace. When I'm sitting at a baseball game in person, here at Petco Park in San Diego, I want the game to move a little quicker, you know? And, you know, so I, as much as I love to watch, you know, Juan Soto and Manny Machado, and now they got Xander Bogaerts and all those, the big bats just do their thing out here, I want to see a game that's a little quicker. I didn't even mention Fernando Tatis Jr., did I?
Should have thrown him in there too. No, he did not.
Well, you know, he needs to play again for me to throw his name in there. So that's what he needs to do. So I'll see him, Eddie. The Royals are coming out to San Diego in early May.
Yeah.
Royals are coming to San Diego, baby. Yeah, that doesn't happen very often, so you better believe I'll be there for that.
I already knew that.
In fact, it works out perfectly, and I'll get back to the pitch clock to end it here in a minute, but it works out perfectly because they're up in Anaheim on a weekend series, like in mid to late April, and then they're in San Diego like 2 weeks later, and it's a weeknight series, so it's not quite as convenient, but it's like 2 weeks later, so I'm literally going to go up to Anaheim, catch them in a weekend game. 2 weeks later, they'll be down here in San Diego, and I'll catch them in a weeknight game down here at Petco Park. Here about 15 minutes from my apartment, and I'm looking forward to it. I've never seen the Royals play here in San Diego. The last time they were here was 12 years ago, And I was in Manhattan at K-State at that time, which is wild, Eddie. That is wild. That is, time is flying by. It wasn't 12 years ago. That was like 10 years ago, so I shouldn't date myself. But anyway, pitch clock.
I just did.
Pitch clock. When I'm sitting there watching the Royals Padres game, I don't want to sit there and watch them just adjusting their batting gloves for 15 seconds. You know, I want to watch the game. So pitch clock them for it. Just a couple other quick rules, baseball things, too. The bases are bigger. They look like pizza boxes now.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
They're huge. But I'll say this. If they are going to cut down on the number of leg injuries that we see around the bases, I'm for it. I'm for that. It stings. Those bases, they were smaller, they were curved, and they were slippery, and you'd see players slide off of them, and they have nasty knee injuries and ankle injuries. And so if it's going to cut down on that, I'm cool with that. I don't know if you're going to ask any other baseball rule questions, but I will say with the bags, they look weird, but if they're going to cut down on injuries, I am here to cut down on injuries too. So I'm for that as well.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything baseball related tonight on this podcast, but yeah, it's going to take used to seeing those bases that big. But yeah, if it's going to cut down on any of the serious injuries, I'm also good for it. We're going to be seeing a lot of action on those bases. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
What about the shift, Eddie? The shift. What do you think of no more shift?
No more
swing shifts, I should say. More of the three infielders on one side.
I'm fine with that.
You think that's good?
I'm fine.
I'm
fine
with it, too.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. I mean, that's what they usually, again, probably dating myself, but, yeah, that's back in the day, yeah, when I played baseball, yeah, you didn't see those shifts. Playing those ridiculous shifts, especially for a left-handed batter like myself. Everybody, three infielders on one freaking side. You have the third baseman all over the shortstop side. And basically, you can't get no hits unless you can take it the other way. So, I am definitely for that. No more shifts. You got to earn it. Go ahead.
And you still can shift. You just have to have
two on each side. Two on each side. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So like, hey, if you're like, oh, he's more prone to hitting it up the middle, you can shift your guy like right up.
Right. Yeah. You still move around, but not as much.
Mm-hmm. But just, you can't do the whole three infielder thing, the whole swinging an infielder over. I'm for that. And then extra innings, I think that's the one other. The extra innings, they decided to keep the player at second base to start extra innings. I know some people don't like that, but you know what it gets to, Eddie?
I still don't like that, but whatever.
They're doing it because they want to cut down on time.
They want
shorter games. And they're like, they don't want extra inning games going 18 innings. they want these games to end quicker. So, when you put a player on second base, that's going to end extra inning quicker.
We saw a game in the postseason that went pretty deep, like 15, 16 innings. I think it was Cleveland and somebody it was Tampa Bay and Cleveland. Yeah, last year went deep, like 16, 17 innings, something like that. So, they're bringing that into the extra inning game. So, I'm for that, though. Regular season, maybe I shouldn't care that much, but being on the losing end on majority of those. But, hey, I mean, it's make it faster. I'm okay with it.
I'll say this. I think it has more strategy. I like the strategy part of it. With nobody out. Yeah, I get it. The baseball, again, baseball purists hate it. They think it's stupid. It sucks. Makes no sense. And, like, I get it. It doesn't make a ton of sense, sure. But there's so much strategy. Like, when extra innings go on, I would sit there and be like, oh my gosh, this is so annoying. All these players are just swinging for the fence. They're tired. They're mentally not there anymore. There's no strategy going on. And then you put a runner at second base starting in the 10th. Like, you immediately got a strategical thing. Do I bunt? That bunt? Do I get up to third? Like, do I want to play in? Do we try to go for two runs or do we only want to go for one run? I mean, there's so much stuff you got to think about. And strategically consider. And so I really do like that aspect. As a fan, I am much more plugged into extra innings now than I used to be just because there's a lot more going on, right?
Yep.
And I think it's good for the casual fan. You want to pull the casual fan in, that's going to be something to do it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The strategy definitely comes into play when that extra runner was on base to begin next inning, extra frame. So definitely, that's that more intriguing part of the game as well. So for what it is, it definitely adds some more attention to the game. So definitely a lot of adjustments to the Major League Baseball as well, making the game a little bit more enjoyable, a little bit more quicker than just sitting there and waiting for something to happen. So I'm glad that their MLB is acting on these changes and it seems to be working. So it's going to take a little bit of adjustment for some of those players, definitely for sure. But once they get into a rhythm, like playing every day, I think it's going to be no problem at all. You won't hardly notice it at all. So yeah, especially
for, I think you're right.
Especially for the pitchers. Some of the pitchers work quick anyways, step down and know up anyway, so.
Oh, they do. 100%. And think about it. Like, remember Mark Burley? Remember how quick Mark Burley used to just go in there and just get through games of the Chicago White Sox? Or I do. Maybe I remember because he was in there.
I remember. I know he is. Yep.
Yeah, he got the ball and he went, man. And I tell you, his games flew by. And as a fan, it was pretty enjoyable. Like, it wasn't enjoyable seeing him just strike out every Royal tender and, you know, him just make good work of them. But it was enjoyable to see the game go in 2.5 hours. You know, that was enjoyable. And the pace was more. And you know what? This is the best way I can think to describe it. It's kind of like watching a college basketball game, Eddie, where the officials are calling like all fouls, and it's disrupting like the flow of the game. And it's just not like a free flowing game. The whistles are blowing. There's a bottom free throws. It's just kind of extended out. There's no rhythm. But if you have that's kind of like a baseball game where the pace slows down. It's kind of like that. But when a baseball game, when you've got a pitcher who works fast, it's kind of like that basketball game where no fouls are getting called and they're running up and out the court, right? Mm-hmm. And they're continuing to go. And it's just completely different pace. And that's kind of what it's like with a pitcher that works quickly, kind of like Mark Burley did. So I think that it's going to feel more like that when this season rolls around. And again, as a baseball fan, that's something I'm excited about. But I just have a feeling, Eddie, I could be wrong, that once we're going to get to the playoffs and some rule change is going to do something that's going to make someone throw a fit. I don't know what, I don't know how, I don't know any of that detail, but it feels like that always happens. Something like that always happens, so that might happen. But you know what, I think all in all it's good for sports, good for baseball. It's a sport that, no offense to baseball, but it kind of, the fan interest has kind of weaned a little bit, and you got to find a way to get. It's kind of what Brett Yormark's doing with the Big 12. Get younger, get hipper, not hipper, but you know, get young, you know, trying to get younger, trying to grow the sport. You got to think of, well, what can we do to do that? And you know, there's going to be some people, Eddie, who are going to tune in because they're going to want to see a baseball game with pitch clock. I mean, it's going to be a thing. It's going to be a thing, And so I think it is ultimately good for the sport. The sport needs some change. I'll put it that way. The sport needs some change. I don't think there was any disputing that.
All right, we're leaving right there, folks. Good conversations all the way around the Purple Project Podcast, episode 148, about to come to a close again. Next week, I will be with a special guest next week, which will be episode 149, and then already our main milestone, 150. We're gonna have to figure that one out, obviously, with the tournament about to start, so we might have to wait on that until afterwards, but we'll talk about that a little more off air. But Alex, last thoughts before closing out.
Yeah, last thoughts, Eddie. I'll just sit it with K-State basketball. You know, big game for them against West Virginia on Saturday. Hopefully they can go out and they can get a win. And it's going to be a really tough road game. West Virginia has been playing good basketball. They just got to win in Ames. And they're going to be ready to go. So it's going to be really tough to go to Ames. Really tough to go to Morgantown to get a win. But if they can get that win and get another quad one win, which I think would be their 10th of the year, that puts them in a really good spot going into Kansas City to get positioned for a two seed. In the NCAA tournament, because right now they're kind of on that fringe 2-3 line in the NCAA tournament. So It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Kansas City, as you mentioned, will be a lot of fun. And it's always a great time when they're in Kansas City. Really eager to see what they do there, whether they can go on a run or if they're going to be one and done or semifinal done or whatever happens there. But either way, it will be a good tournament regardless of what happens with K-State. It will be entertaining. The Big 12 has been an absolute blast this year. And then we get the NCAA tournaments, Eddie, and then that's March Madness, man. I mean, I turned down a trip on a sailboat on March 18th, I think the date was, because I was like, golly, it's March Madness, and I just don't know if I can miss a whole day of basketball.
Yeah, man.
And so I had to say no to a sailboat trip, Eddie. I had to do it. I know. I probably should have taken the sailboat. YOLO, man, go out in the ocean with the sailboat, but it's March Madness. It's one of the best times of the year. It's one of the best times of the year. The fact that K-State is back in March Madness, man, it's got me juiced. It's so much fun. And K-State was just nowhere to be seen the last few years. And it was kind of depressing. So to have them back in it is so much fun. Don't take it for granted. That's what I really the message to the fans. Enjoy it. Soak it up. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, this is a fun time, and this is really it, man. This is really it. Before, you know, we got baseball in the summer, but I mean, this is really it. So buckle up and enjoy it, and enjoy the rest of this run.
Yeah, that I wouldn't said it better myself. Wow, March Madness. Yeah, I think I'll be watching basketball all day. Instead of being on the boat. That's sweet.
Look, man, sailboats are fun, but you know. I get a little seasick, Eddie, sometimes. I got to take a little Dramamine already anyway. I'll go on a sailboat, but it's not like I love sailboats, but I do love March Madness. So, doing the math there. So, sign me up for some basketball on Saturday, March 18th.
All right. Sounds good for K-State Nation, folks. Again, if you're new to this podcast, again, you love what you're hearing. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast, the Purple Project Podcast, wherever you get your podcast there. And, of course, feel free to leave us a four- or five-star rating or review of your choice. Again, no more one-star. We are not going to allow that on this podcast. I'm going to keep on saying it as well. So I don't want to see it. Don't want to hear it. Don't want to see it. That's how I got word of it. Somebody saw it. That listen to this podcast constantly, and I think those two listeners were pulling that out, so that's been bothering me. So I don't want to hear it. Don't want to see it. So 4-5 stars.
They're gonna find you. They're gonna hunt you down and find you.
Yeah, we're gonna find you if you do that. So don't do it. Do not do it. This is a good time of the year. Alex pretty much said it. March Madness, K-State is going to be back in the big dance, and we're going to be back on here to talk about it. It looks like we're going to do the 150th show of this podcast, so come to think of it. So I might save it for that. So definitely excited for that. However, the Germany in the Big 12 tournament plays out, whether it's a one-done or get into it or come short in the championship or don't make it. It's going to be a good time. So plan around that. But before that, it'll be episode 149 with our special guest, and we will talk Big 12 tournament along with, of course, K-State basketball. So I'm going to leave you to figure out who that person's going to be. Alex Aiden is always fun. Record this podcast as usual, favorite time of the week to record, and we shall do this again next week like usual. It's going to be a big one.
It's gonna be a big one. 150, man. Big 150.
Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you all in the next episode of the Triple P Podcast. Go Cats!